And here we are, Denise Alvarado with us as we talk about the life of the magic of Marie Laveau, about voodoo and hoodoo and all those other good things. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you with Denise Alvarado, our final segment here, the final hour, the magic of Marie Laveau. Are there chants with voodoo, Denise?
There's chants, there's songs, and there's prayers. Excuse me. Yeah, chanting is not the same as like in witchcraft.
Right.
There's a lot of chants in Wicca and witchcraft, but in voodoo there's more prayer and song.
A lot of incantations.
There's some.
How did you get interested in this?
My interest was. Well, I was introduced to the mysteries when I was about 5 or 6 years old by an aunt on the bayous of Mississippi. And so, I was introduced to it. I don't know why I was, but I've always been kind of open to...
Are you glad you were?
I'm very glad I was.
No regrets.
It's part of who I am, so yeah, why would I regret that? I mean, it's been a gift to me in a lot of ways.
Well, I bet. Yeah. Let's go back to the calls. Joe in Monterey, California. Joseph, take it away.
I like your choice of music, George.
Which one?
Jimi Hendrix, Voodoo Child.
That was, Danny did that, I'll be honest with you.
Denise, to clear things up, I wanted to ask a few questions, but I can't stay on too long. I know you probably work with spirits, and also in Africa, they have tribal deities. They are people that have passed on. They're the elders. Their wisdom have a lot of wisdom, and they still look over the tribe. We have that in all the religions. All the religions have that. So I don't see why people get upset because of the lies that were told about it. I do know that every religion has an esoteric side and an occult side as well. And occult means hidden knowledge. It's what you do with the knowledge that defines you. Okay. You have a website, and there's a lot of products on it. Do you work with the spirits of those herbs energetically? As well as physically, because you can, you know.
Herbs don't have spirits, do they?
Yes, they do.
Do they, Denise?
I mean,
I'm losing you on the phone. Are you there? You're not there. We're going to have... we'll have Gina check you out and see if we can get it. But, Joe, you're telling me that herbs... have spirits?
Well, my friend and I, she's extremely psychic, and I'm very sensitive also. And we found that certain herbs, we can call on the spirits, and they come. They're energetic. They're different. There's spirits or soul that has that energy. They're in charge of the herb itself as a consciousness. So when people pass on, they can continue being a healer in the other dimensions. And all these different things, and crystals also have these oversouls or these caretakers, guardians, if you will, and masters. So we can call upon them and receive the energy or work with the energy as a healer. So, yes, they all do. Everything's alive, George.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
How did you know this?
Years of practice, discovery, exploring, 25 years of exploring all this. Yeah, you learn a lot of stuff.
Oh, you sure do. Okay, Joseph, thanks. We're continuing to take calls. Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina, welcome to the program. Hi, Barry, you are on the air with us.
Hi there, George. What's going on, buddy? I hope you're doing great. And listen, Cornelius called me and said some of my buddies have been worrying, Wayne and Mike, and just want to let everybody know I'm doing fine.
Good. And I think we've got Denise back if you want to ask her a question.
Yes, I do, George. First of all, let me comment that I'm a Creole from the way past. In 1953, 54, and 55, I was 10, 11, 12 years old in Bogalusa, Louisiana. I was in Creole country, and my parents and I used to go to a little church that was a Christian church, but that you could tell the Creole voodoo vibes coming from it, George and Denise. And I just wondered what you thought about the little area. It's about an hour and a half north of New Orleans, and it's in the swamps, and it's very close to where these slaves ran away and hid out in the swamps and kept from being slaves.
Are you familiar with that area, Denise? Your phone's not working. No, your phone. Let's go to your cell phone, all right? She'll call you on your cell phone. You plug it in, and we'll do that, and we'll use that as a backup to be sure. And let's go to Dave in New Orleans, first-time caller. Welcome to the program. Hey, David.
Hey, George. I'd like to ask your guest the question, if she gets back. I've lived in New Orleans for over 50 years. I was a chauffeur for 20 years. And we were trained to tell the story about Marie Laveau, of how she became so famous.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Should I wait till your guest gets back on?
Well, I don't know if we're going to get her or not. We're going to try, but go ahead. Keep talking.
Okay. Well, the story is that originally Marie Laveau was a beautician, and she worked in the beauty shop, and she catered to the rich women clientele. And while she was servicing them, they would talk about Marie Laveau and her voodoo and everything. And these prominent women would get her to cast spells on people that they didn't like.
Interesting. Now I think Denise is back with us. Denise, you with us? Denise?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay,
there you are. Finally.
I don't know what's going on with the phones here, but
Marie Laveau is trying to stop you from being on this program for some reason.
No, I really think it's Mercury.
Retrograde, it could be.
Yes.
So did you hear his question about the Marie Laveau casting spells on people that women would ask her for help?
Well, I came in, I think, when he was talking about Marie Laveau being a beautician, a hairdresser, and that is true. She did work for the upper class in particular, and she'd go to their homes and fix their hair, and then you know how women talk when they get their hair fixed, and so she would gather a lot of intel that way, and she knew the ins and outs of people's lives on an intimate level. And so she had information that she could use.
So she wasn't a saint by any means, was she?
I mean, she wasn't a saint. No, she wasn't perfect. She was smart. She was cunning. She was a businesswoman.
Interesting. Next up, let's go to Flushing, New York. Miguelina is with us. Miguel, good, Alina. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, George. It's always a pleasure to hear you. I wish you were here in the East Coast so that I could listen to you when the sun is out.
Oh.
Good morning, Miss Alvarado. You happen to have my mother's last name is was Alvarez, so there's a connection there.
It might be related.
Okay. Yeah, Alvarez, Alvarado, they're very almost the same. I grew up in the Dominican Republic, and I went to a Catholic school. As far as I know, the Catholic Church does not approve of Santeria or the practice of
voodoo,
the African religion, or we call it brujeria, which is more like the translation would be like enchantment.
Uh-huh.
And my grandmother was a practitioner. she read the cup, you know, the coffee cup. They drink the black coffee. They turn it upside down, the cup. They leave a little bit in the bottom.
They read the tea leaves in the coffee.
It's like a tea leaf, but with coffee.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to, my grandmother assisted this man that received spirits. And some of them, I remember Yemaya. I don't know if this is familiar with you, Denise. Yemaya, Chango, Elewa. Mm-hmm. And I was supposedly, he announced my birth before anybody knew that my mother had given birth. And I was supposed to be somebody following that tradition. But and my biggest fear was the nuns finding out that my grandmother was practicing this. So I always live in that fear. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I could talk about. Like, for example, some people, for example, there's a practice that if a woman puts a little bit of her menstrual fluid in her husband's drink, she will have him for the rest of his life. He won't go away from her.
What a custom.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on. And the Haitians, who are our neighbors, they claim that our practice is stronger than they are, and they practice voodoo. But could you imagine my conflict? My grandmother reading the tea leaves or the coffee imprints.
Mine did the same thing.
To the Monsignor.
Yeah.
I think you have mentioned that your family did the same thing.
Yeah, my grandmother used to do that. They used to have parties where they would do that all the time. And I'm sure you're at conflict with that, with the church. They don't get into that stuff at all. At all. So, Denise, what happens with voodoo next? I mean, how often is it practiced by people?
I don't know at this point, you know, how many people are, you know, before Hurricane Katrina, there was some estimates of about 15% of the population in New Orleans were actually voodoo practitioners. I have no idea
That's
now.
Pretty high, 15%.
Yeah, and there's been an influx of people opening up new businesses, and, you know, a lot of it you can attribute to the internet because, you know, the flow of information. A lot of people are getting into it and opening up shop.
We're going to Mike the Millennial in Denver. Welcome to the program. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. I beat you to it.
Oh, my God. Hi, George. Oh, thank you, George. And I have to agree with Joe in Monterey. Dan Galante really plays great music, and he keeps the show rocking for us. So
yes,
thank you,
does.
Dan.
he's going to want more money now. Thanks.
Denise, thank you so much for covering the topics of Marie Laveau. I think that historically it's very important, and I wish more, you know, people in my age group, millennials, would have an interest in it and an appreciation of it also, because she really opened the doors for a lot of women, and especially women of color, in her field. So thank you to Marie Laveau for that. My question for you tonight is actually about the movie The Skeleton Key with Kate Hudson. And Kate Hudson is a great actor, but that's a conversation for another show. The Skeleton Key actually talked a lot about how it was an ancient family in New Orleans on a plantation, and they did a lot of conjuring in this house. And my question to you is do these spirits stay in the house after they're conjured, or can they be removed realistically, or do they have to make that decision to leave on their own? Thanks.
Yeah, what happens to the spirits? Do they stay or leave?
Well, the Skeleton Key, that's Hollywood, so we need to not even consider that in terms of what the reality is. When you conjure in the spirit in the context of voodoo or hoodoo, there is, you never just open a door and don't close it. So if you invite a spirit in for a particular reason, you invite them in for a specific time, and then you have to close the door. And that's what Papa Legba does for us. He opens and closes the door to the spirit world. If you don't close the door, then they'll linger around and they can cause trouble. So if you don't formally tell them to go back or go away, they're going to stay, usually.
Yes, they are. Pesty. Dennis is with us in the northern part of Maine. Welcome to the program. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, George.
Go ahead,
Hi,
sir.
Hi, Denise.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I just moved out of Louisiana a few months back, and I live in the Great North Woods now, off-grid. And
Oh, you do? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had a spell put on me back in the late 70s. This is kind of the dark side of what really happens in voodoo. You know, I fell in love with a girl from school, and we were, of course, out of school then. But, you know, I had a relationship for 2 years with her, and everything was, you know, the family was great. The family loved me. I was there all the time. Her child loved me. You know, everybody was getting along good. But I broke off the relationship at a time when they thought I should have been marrying her.
Mm-hmm.
And little did I know that one of her aunts was a practicing voodoo priestess. Well, one of her sisters came to me and told me that, she put a curse on you. And I said, really? She said, yeah, she put a curse on you. She said, no matter what you do the rest of your life, you're going to always have problems.
Wow.
They're going to befall you.
Was she right?
Yes, she was right.
Oh, gosh.
A lot of things did happen to me.
Is the curse...
Okay?
I cut
off my ties to South Louisiana. Gradually, I moved to New Orleans, which I moved, you know, about 80 miles away from them. And got to another parish, but I still was having issues. So, I just tried to live my life right. I have a strong spiritual side myself, okay? And now I have a spirit guide that's kind of, I feel like the tide has turned around now. And I don't know if it's because the voodoo priestess has passed away and her spell is no longer as strong, or it's because I've cut my ties with her, you know, and I'm just not close anymore. But anyway, you know, I got quite a story. This is almost a book in itself about what's happened to me over the past 40 years.
It sounds like you beat it. And you can beat curses, can't you, Denise?
Well, it sounds like you needed a really good cleansing that you didn't get. And so over time, the negative effects of a spell can weaken. But really I would recommend, as most practitioners would recommend, that you would do a cleansing. And that's usually a spiritual bath, at least in my tradition. That's what we
do. They work?
Start with. They work. They work very well.
Okay.
And a spiritual bath is just you take a bath with a certain prescribed herbs or herbal combination.
It's interesting how that stuff works, I guess. When earthy from the planet, it seems to work. We're going to come back and wrap things up in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, back with our final segment with Denise Alvarado. Her book is called The Magic of Marie Laveau. And let's go to Louise in Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Louise.
George, thank you for accepting my call. I would like to make a comment about the beauty of the Creole women in New Orleans, being a combination of the Indians.
You've got a real scratchy phone, Louise. Let's see if we can save it for your call. Where are you, somewhere?
Louisville,
okay.
Yes.
But, I mean, are you in a cavern or something?
Well, I was moving.
Okay, stay right there. Stay right there. Go ahead.
The Creole women in New Orleans, on my mother's side, we have Creole blood. And the women were very beautiful. They had blue-green eyes, long black hair. And you never knew how they would come out, if they were going to be light, brown, dark. And the families, especially those who had money, always wanted their children to go to France to study. And many of them went to France, and they were artistic, musicians,
wow,
into fashion design. And many of them are still there today because after the Civil War, they lost their money, their plantations, and they did not come back to America. But they had a reputation for being some of the most beautiful women in the world, especially the Creole balls. And Frank Yerby, who was a very famous writer, wrote the book Foxes of Harrow, and it was about the Creoles of New Orleans, and it was made into a movie, and is shown on Turner Classic Movies.
Boy, you know your history. That's amazing. I got to tell you, Denise, our listeners are some of the brightest people in the world when it comes
to things. They are. They have good stories.
I mean, they're just absolutely incredible. They really are. So what's your next project?
My next next project is a book called From Annie Christmas to Zozo Labrick.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's about the voodoo saints, voodoo spirits and hoodoo saints of New Orleans. So I'm talking about, in that book, some of the lesser-known spirits, like Annie Christmas, like Jean St. Malo that we talked about earlier, the legend of Julia Brown.
But no curses, right?
Oh, yeah, there are curses.
Oh, boy. There would be curses. Denise?
It's always associated.
Good luck with this book, The Magic of Marie Laveau. You put a lot into it, and good luck to it, and yeah, good for you. Now, of course, it's only fitting to have something a little somewhat spooky to end the program with, so we will do that for you right now.
The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. True. Nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous, I had been in M. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none, passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad? Madmen know nothing. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh, so gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern. All closed, closed, that no light shone out. And then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly. Very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening, so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ah, would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh, so cautiously, cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight, but I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work. For it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning, when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber, and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone, and inquiring how he has passed the night. So you see, he would have been a very profound old man, indeed, to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moves more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea, and perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close fastened through fear of robbers, and so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on, steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quite still and said nothing. For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed listening, just as I have done, night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently, I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. It was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew this sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it was welled up from my own bosom, deepening, with its dreadful echo, the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt, and pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise, when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor, or it is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with all these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he neither saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, until at length a simple dim ray, like the thread of the spider, shot from out the crevice and fell upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with a perfect distinctness, all a dull blue, with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray, as if by instinct, precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say, there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier into courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could maintain the ray upon the eve. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder. I say louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous. So I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer, I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst. And now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. I then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length, it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there for many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His eve would trouble me no more. If you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the board so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, No stain of any kind, no blood spot, whatever. I had been too wary for that. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart, for what had I now to fear? There entered 3 men, who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I smiled, for what had I to fear? I bade the gentleman welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search, search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed them his treasures, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice. Yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much such as a sound a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards, but the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God! No, no, they heard, they suspected, they knew, they were making a mockery of my horror. This I thought, and this I think. But anything was better than this agony. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark! Louder! 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 Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here! Here! It is the beating of his hideous heart.
Classic. I'll always remember that when I was a kid. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Benald, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.